This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're ready. We're here. We are live from Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. You're here with Dr. Jeff, host of the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vets with Dr. Jeff. And of course, Instagram Live, here for you, here for your pets. And just anything you want to talk about, is now's the time to do it. Having a wonderful time. This time we're at a family resort because we brought two of my kids and five of our grandkids. And so they're having a blast. They're down at the pool at the beach. I'm up here in my room studio, and I could not let another week go by without talking to you guys. So here we are, live. So, and you know the drill, any questions you have, anything you want to talk about, now's the time to do it. And you know, we've had some interesting conversations, you know, over the last several weeks. I know we talked about insurance last week. We'd love to know how you feel. We had one of our followers, our callers, was definitely for pet insurance, and that's great. You know, anytime that I hear that, I'm thinking to myself, you know what? That's a person, if they go to Las Vegas, they are going to win. It's fantastic. But, you know, unfortunately, the way it is, most people aren't going to do so well. But, you know, as I said about, and we started this last week, is that whatever you do, you're going to need it the most when you don't have it. So the key really is that you want to make sure that you have prepared in some way for that rainy day. Hi, Steph. Mara says hello, and we saw some people playing cribbage yesterday. So anyway, we definitely thought about you guys. So that's another couple that we met at one of our other vacation spots, Unlimited Vacation Club. And anyway, so George and Walter, I hope, are doing fine. And so let's get some good questions. Anything you guys want to talk about? Anything that's happening with your own pets? You know, one of the things that unfortunately I see, and I'm dealing with it now with a couple of cases, that I wish every case were easy. You know, sometimes I can hear a history and already make a diagnosis, even without exactly examining the animal. I mean, that's not a bad and not a good thing to say I'm going to make a diagnosis without examining the animal. But we know there's certain things that just pop up so regularly that when I hear the history, I kind of, and I can see, especially if I do on video, I know what's going on. Then you have cases that we've gone through all the basic tests. We know what's going on. We know the treatments that are the typical classic treatments, but I often joke that unfortunately, the animal didn't read the book. That pet didn't read the book. So they don't know how they are supposed to respond to a particular treatment. We know textbook-wise what's supposed to work, but it doesn't always work. What happens then? So we get to a point where if we are treating a patient and we are throwing everything at them, and I'm talking a patient not just from my humble diagnosis, but also sending them to a specialist, having that specialist come in and do some specialized testing. And we have a legitimate diagnosis now that matches what we suspected. And yet all the basic treatments aren't working. So now everyone's scratching their heads going, well, what do we do now? So this gets to the point, it's more a matter of being realistic as opposed to being idealistic. Idealistic wise, we would love to help them all and do everything. But realistically, and this is what I say, if we get to the point that in order to make a diagnosis, we need very specialized testing, for example, like a CT, computerized tomography, or an MRI, or we know the problem is in the liver or the spleen, and we need biopsies. And so now we're either talking about laparoscopically biopsy or surgical biopsy, or we actually open up the abdomen and take whatever we need. So sometimes we are forced to do that to get to add to our diagnosis, to make it more of a specific diagnosis, to then modify our treatment. But one thing I say, and again, this is where if you know me, I always say age is not a diagnosis. In other words, I'm not going to make a choice just based on age. But I will say this, and this is where the practical hat over the academic hat comes in, and I'm very proud to say I wear more than not, often than not, I wear a practical hat. We get to a point where we have a much older dog, and the only way to get the answer is going to be through some of these major, very expensive, several $1,000 tests. I often say that if it takes that much to get the diagnosis, I can only tell you one thing. whatever it is, it's not going to be easy, a slam dunk. Oh, that's what it is. Let's give this pill. We're good. No, if we get to the point where the only way we're going to get a diagnosis is through very specialized, very expensive testing, then the reality is, the practical part of it is that more likely than not, it's not going to be an easy treatment either. So this is where it's important to have a framework getting into a case that you have in your mind a button, a stop button that's going, oh, time out a second. Let's see what's it going to take to treat. How sure are we that the treatment is going to help? How much is this treatment going to cost? And at what odds, what percent of animals getting this treatment, now that we finally, after all these very, very expensive tests, have an answer, how likely is it that treatment is going to fix the problem? A, period, but even not period, but at what cost? And I don't mean just money cost. I mean emotional cost. I mean time cost. Are we going to have to put this poor pet through several months of some kind of treatment when he's already 15 years old? And again, this is the most difficult part of what I do as a veterinarian and what we do and we have to deal with as pet parents, because most people don't think about this until it happens. And then it becomes a very, very difficult concept to have to deal with. And I wish, as I said, I wish I had an easy answer. There is no easy answer. This is where we have to sort of prepare for sometimes the worst, sometimes to almost like having that, you have to sign that document about, you know, DNR, do not resuscitate. At what point do we do that DNR? And we have to say, wow, I'm going to spend $10,000 to get a diagnosis, maybe them give you a full diagnosis. And then it is some sort of weird problem that's going to require major surgery, major chemo, that's going to last several months with only a 30% chance of success. You know, these are dilemmas. And fortunately, these dilemmas don't happen all the time. It's National Puppy Day. I'm just alerted. That's great. So I'm really curious to know, many of you out there today listening, how do you feel about this? What would you do? Have you even thought about it? Have you even spoken to your veterinarian and say, you know, how can we proceed? What should we do? Doc, what would you do if it were your dog? And some of those times I have to answer, I don't know. Until I'm faced with it, it's really hard to, in your mind, you know, come up with this scenario that you have all the answers. We don't have all the answers. I wish I had all the answers. I don't think there's any veterinarian on the planet that has all the answers. Yes, Tiernan and I am based in LA. I'm in West LA. My practice is in Westwood, just near, on Westwood Boulevard near Wilshire. Come on, don't be embarrassed. Let's chime in. See if you, first of all, have any of you been faced with this kind of dilemma? Where you've all the basic, easy tests, the ultrasound, the needle biopsy, all those have come back inconclusive, non-diagnostic. And now you got to go in to much more extensive. And of course, sadly, with extensive comes expensive. So you just got to change that one letter and it could be disastrous because, I don't want people sort of, you know, going up that wrong tree. It's something that we really, really need to understand. So come on. Some people here have to have an opinion, have to actually have been through this at one point or another, and maybe can help us, because I will tell you one thing. I have had many, I do a lot of chemotherapy. And of course, I don't do radiation therapy. I have to send that to radiation, a veterinarian who does radiation oncology. But I've done it many times. And, you know, things change over the years, by the way. I'll get back to that in a second. But how many times have I heard someone who had a pet that has gone through extensive chemotherapy, and then a future pet is faced with a cancer, and the discussion pops up about chemotherapy, and they go, no, been there, done that. It's not pretty. We wouldn't do it again. We already decided we wouldn't do it again. I'm just curious how many of you have been through anything like that or been through a situation where the basic testing that your veterinarian has done has basically ruled out a lot of things, but it still hasn't ruled in what the problem is. And the doc says, you know, next step is we have to do a CT of the brain or the abdomen or the bone or an MRI of the brain. You know, whatever it is, we need to go sort of dig deeper into the problem. And at what success did that entail? In other words, did it work? Were you able to make the diagnosis officially, accurately, and then treat successfully? And I'm just curious while we think about that. And then as I'm sitting here in Mexico, beautiful weather, I'm waiting for somebody to join in and tell me of their experience. And so far, none of you have. How is that possible? Okay, X-ray USC for a certain number of pups. Oh, God, good question. So here's a question. Do I recommend X-ray or ultrasound to ascertain the number of pups? Okay, here's how I feel about this. And that's a wonderful question. X-rays do a better job at counting the either the skulls or the backbones. So as far as counting the number of pups and what side they're on, you know, the lateral, and you take two views. You always do a lateral view and you do what's called a VD, a ventrodorsal view. That will split right and left. So you have an idea of what's right and left. And then the lateral view can also help just counting all the heads. But it gives us no information about movement, about heart rate, about even heartbeat. So there, you need the ultrasound. So the ultrasound will tell us viability, but it's very difficult to do a count because sometimes they're overlapped. You're saying to yourself, but did we count this one? Or was this one maybe from the other side? We did already. It is more of a challenge to count when you're on ultrasound. I actually do both. If I'm worried about positioning in the uterus and the body of the uterus, as far as to determine how easy it will be or what size of the birth canal versus, and I do a lot of French bulldogs, the size of the skull to be able to say, sorry, this one's going to need a C-section. Or you see the positioning is right? So there's no breach. They're going to come out. Everything seems to be moving smoothly. I can see, I counted six pups or eight pups. I'm seeing six or eight heartbeats. Everyone I probe has a nice heart rate going. So I am one of those guys that like to do both. One is for positioning and number and side, left side, right side. And the other one is for viability. So I hope that answers the question. Also, an X-ray is better at telling us the potential age of the pups because you'll be able to see skeletons. If you can't see skeletons, then they're too young. They usually keep getting around 5-6 weeks of age, you start seeing some skeletons. Remember that normal pregnancy goes for, it's called gestation, goes for 63 plus or minus five. That means from 58 to 68 days. So then it gives you an idea based on the skeletons about how far along we are. Because sometimes people don't know. Or they say, well, God, I didn't know she was pregnant. Well, then you're really out of luck. Now, or it was an arranged pregnancy, but they bred three times. You don't know which one took. So sometimes I think it's good to do both. Now, having said that, had to make a decision to stop chemo with their Bernese in hopes of a better quality of life, even for a shorter time. And we get this a lot as well. So I would say here that is, it's also typically, I should say this, typically when it comes to chemotherapy in dogs, we don't hit them as hard as people. Oh, we have some people waiting in the room. Maybe you want to join us. Hang on one second. So, and, you know, it's a great comment. And some people opt, they say, you know, I always say, let's try chemo at least for the first time, at least for the first go round. When we come out of remission and it's now you're faced with a time to maybe have to go back in and do a different kind called a rescue remedy, something else that's going to rescue. It's oftentimes more aggressive. It's a different action. People will say, they're kind of weakening. I'd rather have a good quality of life. Now, usually we don't use doses high enough to leave them like people, you know, sitting in hospital beds, severe nausea. Fortunately, we don't do that. Again, I always would recommend, also depends on what type of cancer. At least let's try the first go round. Let's see how we do. And that's how I feel. All right, Mark, we have people in the waiting room. All right, let's do this. Why don't you take the break on Pet Life Radio and we'll come back. We'll answer some of those calls.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back. They did one run of chemo. They just felt it wasn't right to do it again when it gets recommended. It's so tough. Yeah, and by the way, certainly like Bernese Mountain Dog, you know, have a shorter life. Now, let me say, okay, let's go. We have, hold on, I would rather discuss this. There's so much cancer in our past now. Not with the vaccines, we're never getting in. You know, that's a really interesting comment. And again, that's why I am a fan, interestingly, of what we call core vaccines. Maybe we'll get to that. Let's get to some of these calls. Go ahead. You want to put it through? Tyrese, what's up?
My dog keeps popping anal glands everywhere. I was wondering what I can do to help with that.
Ah, okay. Yeah, you guys should probably hear that too, because it's coming through my speaker. A dog who has persistent anal gland problems. Well, first of all, make sure when they're being expressed, make sure a good groomer or a veterinarian or veterinary nurse is doing it, because there are two techniques. One is the easier technique most groomers do, and that's you just squeeze one gland against the other. You don't actually put a glove on. Well, you should put a glove on anyway, but I mean, you're not going to go inside the rectum and do, you know, one gland at a time using your index finger and your thumb and actually expressing them really well. If that has been done and the dog is still going through frequent anal gland need for anal gland expression, then I would consider removing the anal glands. How old is your dog?
2.5.
2.5. Now, who has been expressing the anal glands, and do you know which technique they've been using?
I do not know.
You know, okay. I would check who's been expressing them. Is it a groomer or is it the doctor?
I'd say it's the vets.
The vets are doing it. Hmm. Well, if they're doing the digital technique, they know what I mean, and we're still having such persistent problems, and you have a dog who's only 2, which means you got a long years ahead, hopefully, then you may think about having the anal glands removed if it's become that much of a nuisance. Because, you know, dogs that are getting these anal glands problems, they're not comfortable. They're scooting. They're turning around. They're licking their behinds. So if it
stinks.
And it's that goes without saying. And they always have that fishy smell, that metallic smell. No, 100%. So if it's an older dog and it's easy for you to express and you don't mind doing it, that's your choice. But a young dog who's already having such problems, and you can only hopefully think of the many good years ahead, you might talk to your veterinarian about having the anal glands removed. At least it's worth the conversation.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks for joining us. Mark, anybody else? Oh, Steve M. is waiting. Steve M., are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, yeah, so I have a German Shepherd.
Okay.
It's about, I think it's 6 years old, but it has really bad skin problems, and any like shampoos or anything I've tried to use to help it, but just nothing seems to help.
A 6-year-old German Shepherd with a lot of skin problems. So yeah, first of all, a couple of things. Many dogs have skin allergy. And when dogs manifest their allergy, it's not even inhaled allergens. We call atopy. It's not sneezing and upper respiratory and whatever. It's scratching.
Yeah.
Then once dogs start to scratch, then they break their skin and they get secondary skin infection called secondary pyoderma. That in of itself is really itchy as well. So now you have a dog that have started to scratch because of allergy, but then when they get infected, it continues because the secondary infection hasn't been treated. So if it's persistent, depending on where on the body, you have to make sure we don't have fleas. You have to think about maybe if it's persistent, getting allergy tested. You want to talk to your veterinarian about getting allergy testing, treating the allergy testing with allergy shots, and of course, treating the secondary infection at the same time. If you only treat one and not the other, then you're going to still be at a loss. Now, secondly, the body doesn't lie, especially in dogs. Many different parts of the body can indicate what the culprit is. If it is face, ears, and feet, you got to think food. Food allergy, that's the classic presentation. Now, dogs, if they're on their abdomens, the inside their thighs, also ears are overlap, then we think atopy. That is inhaled allergens, grasses, weeds, trees, things that they inhale, pollens. Then we have the lower back up above the base of the tail. If we see that, that's fleas screaming. I have flea allergy called FAD, flea allergy dermatitis. So it always helps when deciding on a treatment plan to know what the culprits are, or if it's a single culprit. Oftentimes, dogs that are allergic. So it may be more than one thing. So you have to see where on the body are the telltales, and then what treatments have been done, And a lot of times I will say I'm a big fan of Cytopoint, which is the injection. That's an anti-allergy injection. It attacks IL-31, interleukin-31, which is one of the, it's released from T helper cells in response to allergens. And the Cytopoint shot attacks it. There's also an oral medication called Apoquil. And Apoquil works a little bit differently. And that attacks and blocks Janus kinase 1, Janus kinase 3, JAK1, JAK3, which work with interleukin-31 to create the havoc in the skin. So without JAK1 and JAK3, IL-31 is neutralized. So either you can neutralize the IL-31 directly, that's the Cytopoint shot, or you block JAK1 and JAK3, which is the ochlocinetim, which is the Apoquil and pill. So talk to your veterinarian, but make sure that if they have scabs on their body, if they have little sores, if the tissue is red and inflamed, make sure you also talk about antibiotics for protecting against secondary skin infection. And good luck.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And also feet and ears and face, think about diet. Okay, annual vaccination helps, I mean, for indoor cats. Ah, it's a good question. So now it looks like we are an older cat who has seizures from brain injury. She's peed in the home while now and started peeing and pooping on our furniture. Okay, living to diagnose with anal gland cancer last year. He had surgery, removed carcinoma, and later had some rounds of radiation. He bounced back to doing great. Yes, that is great. I'm, you know, removing anal glands and then following up if needed with radiation is the way to go. And I'm very happy. Older cats, seizures from brain injury. So I would treat, if there's brain injury causing seizures, I would treat it as an epilepsy, because in essence, an epileptic focus is the same thing. So you can either try seizure disorder medication, which is Keppra, which is anisamide, which is phenobarbital, or talk to your veterinarian. If they think it's swelling in the brain from the brain injury, then maybe steroids could be helpful. Also, it could be anxiety too, by the way. There are a lot of cats that pee in areas and home and furniture that don't ever have it, have never had a history of brain injury. It's just a behavioral thing. Don't forget that's a possibility. And also think about putting them on amitriptyline or Prozac or, you know, buspirone. Again, talk to your veterinarian or talk to a veterinary behaviorist. Feel away is great. That's a very natural solution. And so I wouldn't hesitate to try some of those also. Okay, there was another one here. Annual vaccinations. Well, I am, as you know, I am a fan of core vaccines, and those are vaccines that are necessary based on lifestyle. And unfortunately, in some states, rabies is required for cats. In California, it's not. So my recommendation is, if you have an indoor cat that is not going to be subjected or exposed to rabies, unless you're inviting rabid animals into your home or apartment, or leukemia, which requires prolonged direct contact with leukemia-positive cat. Again, I have four cats at home. I do not vaccinate for any of those. All I do is give the upper respiratory cat fever, called the FVRCP, and with PNE, which is pneumonitis, once every 3 years. And when I vaccinate my cat, all cats, whether they're indoor, outdoor, or indoor, and only getting one vaccine, or unfortunately all three, we only vaccinate cats in the thigh. Why? As we've discussed before, if they should get this very sad feline vaccine-induced sarcoma, you can save their lives by amputating that leg. So knowing that that feline vaccine-induced sarcoma is a risk of getting a vaccine, why would you want to vaccinate a cat that is indoors and is at no risk for getting two of those diseases? So my recommendation is not to do it. Now, if you're coming from a state that's required, or you're traveling with the cat into a state where it's required, then, I mean, you speak to your veterinarian, you pretty much have to do it. But I am not a fan, and therefore I don't. And now the same with even dogs and other vaccines. For example, living in Los Angeles, am I worried about Lyme disease? The answer is no. So do I vaccinate against Lyme disease? No. How about rattlesnake vaccine? How about corona? You know, corona vaccines, corona, the infection when you get from corona, it's like a 24-hour stomach flu. Do I want to risk a vaccine and a vaccine reaction to protect my dog against a 24-hour stomach flu? The answer is no. So I don't give corona. I don't recommend it. I don't recommend rattlesnake unless you do a lot of hiking in the mountains. I don't recommend lepto. Again, unless you're if your animals are at risk, then I think, yes, you might need to do the vaccine. Bordetella, influenza, lepto are once a year. The rabies and distemper parvo are every 3 years. So again, the first one I do. Now, there are some out there that are the, you know, the vaccine mavens, university level, that say you, after you finish the puppy series at 16 weeks, you're done for 3 years. The woman that I follow actually is a fan of, let's boost those because it was still new, relatively new. We can't predict 100%. We're going to get that really long-term protection. So I like to boost them a year later. So now they're looking at a year and 4 months. But after that, it's every 3 years. So that is sort of the what I've been practicing and how I've been doing it. But I think that annual vaccines for indoor-only cats, they say that, you know, you could do 3 year rabies. I know the jury's out about leukemia vaccine. Do you really need 3 every year? Or can that also be a 3 year vaccine? I just have to follow your doc. If I have to give leukemia, I do every 3 years. Well, first of all, I don't give it at all for indoor-only cats. And I would tell you gladly, most of my feline patients living in a city like Los Angeles, where just the odds of staying alive are much greater when you have an indoor-only cat, why would you subject them to the rigors of the outdoors if you live in a city? Cars, dogs, coyotes, feline leukemia, feline AIDS. Why? So sometimes people say, well, look, it's a cat. He wants out. You know, one of my cats, he's the best cat ever. He's my black ninja, a black cat. He was an outdoor cat. We figured we adopted him. He's about a year of age, maybe 11 months, 10 months, whatever. And he really wanted out every chance he can get. But we kept him indoors. Now our front door can be wide open. And he will look outside one or the other. And he says, got it made in this house. I'm staying right here. You can convert that outdoor cat to being an indoor cat. A lot of love, a lot of good food, on a good schedule, no hunting for their food, good litter boxes, appropriate for the number of cats you have in the household. And I think almost any cat could ultimately be made an indoor cat. But again, I know many of you have tried and failed. So it is what it is. So I want to thank all of you for joining me today. I will be back in town as of tonight, actually. I'm heading back to LA. So I'll be back. We get the injection. It works so well for our dog. Yes, good. I give my cat CBD that he gets older. That's good. Yes, I'm a big fan of CBD. All right. And Evan, how you doing? Actually, I've never asked you about the vaccine you mentioned with my Persian. She's a solo cat. Is it worth discussing? Yes, we should definitely discuss it. Boy, I love this. Pet Lab asks for CBD. You know? Yes, I do know about the product. Thanks, Steph. You know, I think that I know the Pet Lab. I give my dogs some Pet Lab products. Do I think that it's going to replace brushing at least ideally every day, but every other day? No, it's not. Now, might it be better than nothing? It might be. So I would still use it, but there's nothing that's going to replace brushing your pet's teeth to prevent having to come in every year or even sooner than every year with small breeds when they get older for a professional dental prophylaxis. So I think we're good. I think I've answered all my questions. I'm getting dirty looks from Mark as it's 4 minutes past the hour. So, all right, for all of you, you can always get home during the week. You can reach me here on Pet Life Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com. You can reach me here on Instagram. You're here, so you know I'm Werbs_DVM. Just look me for Jeff Werber, and I will be happy to call you back. You can also reach me at Dr. Jeff at DrJeff.com. If you need to talk to somebody immediately before you rush to emergency, go to AirVet, and you'll talk to either me or a doctor on AirVet. So, many ways to get a hold of us, and have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Sunday. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.